Support for WKAR is provided by MSU Alumni Association, offering opportunities for networking, career services, and community involvement with MSU alumni in your area and across the country. alumni.msu.edu. And by MSU Federal Credit Union, providing credit union members with 24-hour account access online and now on your mobile internet. Insured by NCUA.
Welcome back to Current State. This is 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Reach us at currentstate@wkar.org with your feedback, positive, negative, thumbs up, thumbs down, segment ideas, whatever it might be. A little bit of breaking economic news here this morning. U.S. consumer prices were flat in January, and weekly jobless claims rose by about 20,000, and that may be a sign that hiring may remain modest in the U.S. economy. Last November, Mason Democrat Tom Cochran prevailed in the 67th state House race. In his freshman term, the former Lansing fire chief currently sits on the House Transportation and Insurance Committees. And he joins us now to talk about his work in the first 6 weeks tomorrow, right? I think 6 weeks since you were sworn in.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
How is it gone? I mean, unlike Andy Shore and unlike Sam Singh, I mean, you've come from the Lansing fire chief's position. You have not been as immersed in politics as those guys. What has this transition been like?
It's been a great experience. I had served on the Mason School Board for 10 years, so it's not my first elected office.
Okay.
I had served three terms and was required to resign from the school board due to the fact that I was elected to the state house. But I'm very humbled by this experience. I'm very excited. It's immersing myself in, as I was saying to you a minute ago, insurance, transportation, these are things that are totally outside my realm of experience. And so to educate myself, to try to bring myself up to speed to where I can be knowledgeable and serve the constituents hopefully well. And it's been great. I have a whole new level of respect for those that put themselves out there and run for office. There's a lot of hardworking people in Lansing. Contrary to what some might say, there's a lot of staff people that work very hard. You know, those elected officials are working very hard. Even, you know, on both sides of the aisle, they're there for the reasons that they feel very strongly about. And it's been a great experience. I'm very humbled to be here for this 2 years and hopefully to serve my full three terms.
But you're doing some homework, it sounds like.
Doing a lot of homework. It was funny. We had a committee meeting the other day, and they came in, and they dropped about an inch and a half thick stack of papers on my desk or our desks, and, you know, to go through all that and try to digest it. And you get a lot of... during this period, initially, you're doing with a lot of meet and greets where you're getting lobbyists and other parties coming in to meet you, to talk with you. And, you know, right away, it was a bit of a delay in getting our committee assignments, which it was a little disconcerting. But now that we have them, you're finding a lot of those people specific to the committees that I'm serving on, those healthcare people, roads people. I'm meeting with them to hear their side of it, mm-hmm. and to hear what their thoughts are on how we might fix our roads or the Blue Cross issue.
There's an intense debate going on over the leadership of your party. Are you attending the convention on Saturday?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes.
You're voting on Saturday.
That's correct.
On member. Can you tell us if you intend to vote for a new party chair?
Well, we'll see what the outcome is going to be with the election. I think it's, you know, it's good. Mark Brewer has been in that position for a long time, and I think he's worked very hard. There's a new Lon Johnson is vying for that position now. I think there's a lot of people that are supporting both of those candidates. I think the debate's a good debate. We've been very successful for the most part in the local seats. We've not done as well in the governor's race over the past few years, or Secretary of State, Attorney General's race. Obviously, with our congressional seats, we've done well. The senators, Locally, this last election in 2012, we did very well, but we've not gained back the majority in the House, is what we're hoping to do in 2014.
Do you know who you're going to vote for? I'll put it that way.
I've not made that decision yet. I'm kind of looking.
You're undecided.
I wanted to meet with the individuals. They brought them in, and they talked with a number of the Democratic caucus, and wanted to hear what they both had to say.
I see the UAW submitted and paid for 1,300 new party members just a few days ago, and it's assumed those new members will vote to oust Mark Brewer. I mean, and any more thoughts on that? I mean, you're literally thinking this over, and you commend Brewer for what he's done, but maybe it's time for a change? That's what I'm hearing a lot.
Change is not a bad thing. I think I'm a believer in change. I think, just change for change's sake is certainly not necessarily a good thing. But I think when you're in positions, you need to move forward. Certainly Mr. Johnson has a lot of experience, as does Mr. Brewer. It was good to hear them both speak, to present their side of the issues and to see where we go. It's going to be interesting at the convention on Saturday. We'll wait and see what happens.
You sit on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and you're involved in a lot of discussion as to how to pay for road improvements. You've gone from the frying pan to the fire here. There's a fire chief allusion in there somewhere. I don't know. The governor is proposing $1.2 billion to address that. He calls for a 14-cent per gallon gas tax hike and a 60% increase in vehicle registrations. Where do you stand on the governor's plan?
I think that's a starting point to talk about. We've not had an increase in gas tax since 1997. I know that, but I'm making a lot of phone calls. I'm calling my constituents. That's the thing that I really enjoy about this job. When I was running for office, from the time of the primary to the election, I knocked on over 7,000 doors. I'm trying to make a couple of hundred phone calls a week to call constituents, to introduce myself, and to hear what they have to say. A lot of them are very concerned in the idea that they are going to be paying more in taxes. Currently, the Republican Party and the governor, again, the Republicans are supposed to be the non-taxing party, and yet with all the changes that we've had, we continue to see more and more taxes put onto the middle class. With the loss of the personal property tax, the earned income tax has decreased. I shouldn't say the loss of the personal property tax, but they've changed the levels at what they can, what they qualify at. So a number of people have lost that ability. There's deductions that they've lost with the child deduction, the educational deductions that they've lost. So people are finding out now this spring here, they're doing their taxes and they're seeing these changes, and it's a loss of those credits. It's a tax, in my opinion. And now we're talking about putting an additional tax as far as our gas, increasing our gas tax, registration fees of up to 50%. There's also the possibility that the governor will allow the locals to add an additional registration fee on cars as well. So that's one more tax. I think everybody agrees, and the people that I talk to, that something needs to be done with our roads and our infrastructure. This isn't just about our roads. It's about our bridges. It's about transportation as a whole. And I think everyone agrees that we need to be doing something. How we get there is the question. And we're in there. We're a lot of meetings. We're having a lot of people come in and talk to the committee. We're hearing hopefully both sides of the issue.
There's apparently just yesterday there were a couple of stories that surfaced regarding polluters. And the people who are really responsible for creating more pollution, mm-hmm, to really probably take a bigger hit in terms of paying for roads, and maybe the heavy vehicles as well, because in our climate, apparently, with the hot temperatures, the cold temperatures, what have you, trucks just take a bigger toll on the roads than in a lot of other states. Does that have a future? Is that something you're going to consider closely?
We're going to consider everything. I think that it'd be a combination of user fees, taxes that would be put into place is what I would anticipate, not just for, you and I when we go to the gas pump, possibly when we pay for our registration for our cars, but also for those those commercial vehicles as well. You know, Michigan has a lot of restrictions on their on the weights of their vehicles, mm-hmm. And it's done for a reason, to disperse the weight of the vehicle over the vehicle itself with the multiple axles, and that is to try to decrease that damage on the roads themselves. Again, this is some of the things that I'm just learning, Mark, being in this position. So, but there, yes, you know, there's a lot of people that would say, and it just intuitively, those heavier vehicles, commercial vehicles, you would think would cause more damage than your car or my car might. So I think it needs to be, we need to look at all those possibilities. We all use the roads, but my concern is the impact this is going to have on our middle class, the people that have continued to take hits, and our seniors. And those though that can afford less to pay for these things, they continue to see their taxes increase due to the Republican policies, and it's unfortunate.
Would you be okay with some kind of increase in the gas tax, maybe just not quite as high as what the governor is calling for?
I think, again, yes, we need to look at that possibility that we will all pay for that. How we will do that or what that amount might be, it might be an incremental. You know, the governor, they would like to see this in place, that $1.2 to $1.5 billion to start next year. I think we need to phase this in so the impact isn't as great. There's also been discussion about the increase of sales tax as a means to
right.
do that. So I think we need, as a committee, we'll look at this as a whole, we'll make our recommendations, you know, we'll put this out and we'll see where it goes. Something needs to be done. I think everyone's in agreement. We need to support our infrastructure.
Is $1.2 billion, does that number get kicked around on your committee as maybe higher than it needs to be?
We've not had any hard discussion on specifics as far as what those amounts might be. That's what the governor's proposed. The committee-wise, we've not said, you know, yes, we agree with 1.2 and how we get there. I think everyone's looking at that 1.2 billion figure, and again, how do we get to that point? Mm-hmm. Is that a combination of gas tax, user fees for commercial vehicles, an increase, slight increase in registration fees? Again, my concern is trying to lessen that impact to our middle class who's continuing to struggle, and to our seniors.
Another member of your committee, Representative Charles Smiley of Burton, apparently brought up the idea of bringing back the Michigan business tax. What do you make of that?
You know, I'm not opposed to that idea.
Really?
I think we need to share the pain for everyone. We need to spread that around, and we need to consider all means. Because this will be, you know, our roads are our conduit for business. You know, it's Michigan's tourism is one of our largest industries, and we need to support that infrastructure so people will continue to come to Michigan to enjoy the beauty of it. Commercially, the vehicles, the trucks that are transporting in the state, we need to be looking at everyone to help to pay for this.
There were an awful lot of Democrats who thought the Michigan business tax was a pretty bad idea, though, too.
Right.
So, I mean, that did have some bipartisan support, getting rid of that.
You're absolutely right. And I think we just need to look at everything. And what that might be, maybe it wouldn't be to the degree that it had been. You know, he just presented this in a committee just the other day, and it was interesting that he brought that up. So we'll be talking about that as well.
Do you pick up the feeling that some kind of road funding package will pass this year?
I think so. I think we can hopefully come to an agreement. But again, the concern of the Democratic Party, is how do we lessen that impact of the working men and women of the state, because they are taking and have continued to take hits from these Republican policies.
You also sit on the insurance committee, as we pointed out. Where does the Blue Cross Blue Shield overhaul stand right now, and what do you expect?
Well, we are having a lot of discussion about it. With Blue Cross Blue Shield, you know, they're talking about this restructuring of Blue Cross to make this a more competitive. Blue Cross is in support of this. There's a lot of people that are in support of the idea of restructuring Blue Cross Blue Shield. The talk about this would create a $1.5 billion fund that would be paid in over an 18-year period to help with certain medical programs. But we're having a lot of discussion about this. They, you know, as you know, with last session, they pushed this through. Had passed and was on the governor's desk, but due to certain language, the governor did veto it. And
it was abortion language.
Language, correct. And, you know, we don't know. We've heard that that might be reintroduced. We don't know that for a fact. It has not at this time. I am concerned, again, and the impact of this on seniors and how they will be affected by this.
We have time for one more question. There was a Democrat a day or two ago, John Olumba, I believe his name was, from Detroit, who left the caucus.
Correct.
To become an independent, as I understand. He's going to be a one-man caucus, and apparently his beef with the Democratic caucus is that he has to go through too much leadership in order to have contact with the Republicans. Do you have any response to that? Can you put that in any kind of perspective for us in the 6 weeks you've been there?
Well, I think we have a lot of individuals that come together from all walks of life, and to me that's what this democracy is all about. And Mr. Olumba has delivered a letter to everyone in the House stating his intent and his reasons behind that. I think he felt very strongly, obviously, for why he did what he did. I don't know that I agree in that. I think we could have worked together. He could have worked with the leadership. He obviously felt otherwise and made this decision. I think it. To me, this is what democracy is. You know, we have people from all walks of life, from every part of the state of Michigan that come together. And, you know, I'm a real believer in the system. And I've also, it's that old adage, you're either part of the solution or you're part of the problem. And
okay.
I'd also like to thank, if I could, my staff. They work really hard in trying to make me look good, which is not always an easy task.
Very good.
Thank you very much, Mark.
All right. Democrat Tom Cochran of Mason is the 67th State House Rep. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Current state on 90.5 WKAR. The 55th annual Detroit Boat Show continues at Cobo Center through this weekend. WKAR's Peter Wharf brings us the next in our series from the Expo with a first look at a Michigan-made product. Peter spoke with Gibbs Sports and Amphibians' Graham Jenkins about the new quad ski, a specialized craft at home, on water, and on land.
Well, the quad ski is a unique product. It can go 45 miles an hour on the land and 45 miles an hour on the water. It can change between the two in 5 seconds. And as you say, assembly started in Auburn Hills, just north of here, late last year. And the first units were shipped to be sold last month.
We're on the starboard side of this vehicle. And the wheels are down on one side. So from here, it looks like an ATV with a jet ski on top. But on the port side, it's wheels up. Can you give us a little more description of this vehicle?
Absolutely. It's been designed specifically that way so that it is regulated as an ATV on land and a PWC, or jet ski, on water. The main difference between it being one or the other, it obviously, is whether it's in water or on land. But on water, it lifts the wheels up out of the water, which is what enables it to get up to speeds of 45 miles an hour, whereas previously commercial amphibians have been limited to sort of below 6 miles an hour.
Graham, tell us about the development of the quad ski. When did the idea first come? Who was the designer? And how did this go from idea to production?
A little over 15 years ago, Alan Gibbs got fed up with nature telling him when he could take out his boat. So he started looking into the problem of trying to have something that goes on land and water. But the early attempts down in New Zealand weren't to his liking. He joined forces with a chap called Neil Jenkins, and together they managed to get a lot of stuff done. And 15 years, $200 million and 2 million man hours later, we're here with the first of our products, the quad ski, that has been being developed specifically since around 2007.
Looks like you just drive this straight into the water and it'll float, and then the wheels will come up.
A little bit more complicated than that. I'm afraid that you have to push one button to make that happen. And that takes about 5 seconds. So yeah, you drive in till you feel yourself floating, which is an unusual feeling in something with wheels, but unmistakable. Once you know you're floating, you hold the brake, press the button, and the wheels will pop up in about 5 seconds, and then you can hit the gas and off you go.
Have you ridden the thing?
A few times, yeah, before the water got a little harder this time of year up here.
What's it like?
It is fun. For me, I've been on ATVs and jet skis. My problem is that I always tend to overextend myself. I flip off ATVs and jet skis. I get wet. I get bounced around. Because the quad ski is a slightly larger and longer wheelbase, it's much more stable on both land and water. I've managed to do a dive off the side of it. It's a much more confidence-inspiring machine, so I actually enjoy it more than its nearest rivals.
Graham, what's been the response to and the interest in the quad ski? I've seen a few people stop by with very interested looks on their faces.
Well, it always draws a crowd, you're quite right. It's interesting, it's new, people always love to see it. However, in terms of sales, this year we're only going to be making about 1,500. So especially in Detroit, that's low volume production, and that's going to be for our worldwide market. We're selling them for around $40,000, which reflects the sort of premium market we're going after in our first year. Sales seem to be going very well. We have a couple of dealers in Florida at the moment. As I said before, in Michigan, the season isn't quite here yet. The water's still too hard, mostly, and we have had very good reception wherever we've shown it. In one day at the Miami Boat Show, we managed to get I think we sold three of them.
Graham Jenkins for Gibbs Sports Amphibians. Graham, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
For Current State, this is Peter Wharf.
And you can see the quad ski and other exhibits at the boat show at wkar.org/current state. Current State producer Joe Lindstroth puts his shoulder into his job every day, and one of the dividends of all of that effort is the music that you hear on the show every day. We've been really gratified by some of the comments about it. This morning, those standards might be tested here for a few moments. For years now, there's been a debate over what Michigan's state song should be. Michigan is one of only three states, I believe, without a state song. Songwriter Mike Ridley of Indian River has a song that was introduced for consideration this week. It joins a long list of previous nominees in this interminable process. Let's give a listen to Michigan Man. This is Mike Ridley.
When I want a far away, a dream stays with me night and day. It's the road that leads to my home state. I am a Michigan man. Changing seasons paint the scene like rainbow trout in a hidden stream, the white-tailed deer in the tall pine trees. I am a Michigan man. I am a Michigan man. Ask where I'm from and I'll show you my hands. Lord above, I love this land, I am a Michigan man. From the Keweenaw down to St. Joe, Kalamazoo.
Mike Ridley's Michigan Man. State Civil Rights Commission online too there, Mike. Coming up in the second half of Current State, we talk with John Austin of the Michigan Economic Council, and local moms have joined a national movement for sensible gun control. Coming up, I'm Mark Bayshore. You're listening to Current State. We learned a couple of days ago, you probably heard, that Office Max and Office Depot are are merging, or one is buying the other, or some such thing. This morning, the lead sentence of the day out of the Detroit Free Press: Office Max and Office Depot are being collated. So, well done. That's nice. It is current state here on WKAR. The Michigan Economic Center has released a new survey with some attention-getting numbers in it. The MEC's Michigan Dream Restored project studied attitudes toward public goods, all of the things that our tax dollars pay for, and asked hundreds and hundreds of people how important those public goods are in terms of the Michigan economy. Here to discuss that report, John Austin, director of the Michigan Economic Center at the Prima Civitas Foundation. Welcome back to Current State, John.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be with you.
Let's talk about your method first. How exactly did you arrive at the figures that you've released?
Well, first, we did a whole series of focus groups with a representative cross-section of Michigan citizens and asking, you know, it was fundamental questions. What does Michigan mean to you? You know, what values do you think we hold in common? What represents the sort of ideal version of the state? Where are we today? What are important priorities to live up to what you hope Michigan can be? What matters most to the economy? And then, you know, how would we do better? How would we pay for important things that folks do value that make Michigan special or points of pride, and that also translate into foundations for economic growth?
Let's jump into one piece of data from the report that's getting a lot of play. Of 1,000 people were asked which of the following two statements they agree with more, and I'll read both statements. It's which statement do you agree with more? Here's the first statement. The most important thing state government can do for job creation is provide quality education, good roads and transportation, good public services like safety, water, fire, parks, and libraries that create an environment in which people want to live, work, and run a business. That is statement number one. Statement number two reads, the most important thing state government can do is to cut taxes for individuals and business. That's what really creates jobs. How did the responses to those two statements break down, John?
Well, overwhelmingly, you know, 64% of Michigan citizens in this 1,000-person survey, very comprehensive, that we did after the focus groups to really test what we were learning from people, 64% said the most important things for job creation are to invest in education and quality community services and a great state that we can enjoy and our beautiful outdoors and protect our conservation lands. That's most important for economic growth, those conditions that make us a state that's an attractive place to live, work, and have a business.
Statement number one.
Right, so statement number one, 29% said cutting taxes for individuals and businesses, that's what really creates jobs. So I think it definitely affirms what I think, you know, we all intuitively know or think about Michigan. You know, what has given us strength over the years? What are we proud of? What matters to the economy? It's been this this beautiful state and great outdoors that we can enjoy with our family. It's been great road system. It's been great universities that are points of pride and pathways to opportunity for our kids. It's been communities that you're proud to live in and that have basic services that make them work. And people fundamentally want to see those commitments, which are the things we do together, what you termed public goods, because, you know, the private sector doesn't provide good roads and great schools and parks and all the things that make Michigan an attractive, vital place, keep our kids here, make it a place people want to make their living and grow their lives and their careers.
Does it suggest to you that Michigan residents are ready to pay more taxes for some of these public goods?
I think we've seen all of these public goods diminished over the last 10 or 12 years. We've cut revenue sharing for community services by 33% over the last decade. We've been defunding our universities and pricing them now, you know, out of reach of working people when they used to be such a high-quality, low-cost pathway to opportunity. We've seen our roads crumble around us, and there is a broad, I think, understanding, widely shared, that we have to do better by these fundamental building blocks of our economy. We haven't mustered the political will to raise revenue to invest in what matters most to the economy that Michigan citizens are telling us. So I hope this does provide some ammunition, some momentum to do better and support the kind of investments that at least Michigan citizens say are the building blocks of a thriving economy and functional communities that people are proud to live in and call home, and that can keep our families close. You know, one thing we've heard so much, this is a family state. It's a great place to raise a family. That's what I've been doing here for 25 years. We want this state to work and thrive, and we need to make a renewed commitment to these foundational assets that have always been sources of strength and pride for Michiganders.
The first statement went into a lot more detail. Government can provide quality education, good roads, safety, water, fire, parks, and libraries that create an environment, et cetera, versus government can cut taxes. The language is so much richer. The second one is a lot more terse. Has anyone commented on that?
Well, I think it just exposes this, you know, different philosophies that are at work and need to be debated. One is that if you do lower taxes and it's all about business climate, somehow magically more companies will move into Michigan. The opposite is if you create conditions that make the state be a well-educated state, a state that's got attractive communities that aren't falling apart and are places people want to live, our young people will stay with us and not flee for greener pastures. They'll keep their talents in Michigan. You know, people are not leaving us for low-tax states. They're leaving us for Chicago's and Seattle's and Boston's and Washington's and New York, where there is a lot more going on. And frankly, there's a lot more commitment to the basic education, infrastructure, transit, things that make an economy work. And I hope this can provide, again, some support. People also, there's another question that we asked, what has been the quality and the services of roads, local police and fire, and education and parks and other things that are public goods? What's been the quality of those? And a majority of Michiganders say it's been diminished. It's been debilitated over recent years. And that is part of why I think they're willing to say these are important priorities, these are important investments, and we need to make them more of the priority when we talk about job creation and economic development.
Well, you know, despite what you're saying, you know, the governor's got a $1.2 billion proposal to invest in roads and infrastructure. The results of your survey would suggest that there's pretty significant support for that. But members of both parties, we heard a local state rep just a few minutes ago saying he's got to take a long, hard look at increasing registration fees and increasing the gas tax in order to improve our roads because it just hits people too hard. Clearly, that factors into the results of your study. What do you mean?
Well, and part of what we all need to help find a path towards, how do we articulate and propose specific investment ideas that really speak to what Michigan citizens care about? Part of what we learned is that when we talk about roads and basic services, people are more interested in doing better by those important investments in order to make communities attractive places and places that they are proud to live in. And we need to both frame why we're doing it that way and then find revenues that folks will broadly support. On the roads and infrastructure, they do feel that, you know, gas taxes and registration fees are too high. They're much more interested in earmarking specific dedicated revenues and new taxes that are going to go directly into roads and basic services in our communities than, you know, perhaps different or new taxes, whether it's making polluters pay or a graduated income tax. Got surprisingly high support, 63%, which would have, you know, we have a flat tax. It's been dropping, too, for a dozen years. You know, one of the reasons we can't afford, or we think we can't afford, investing in roads or education or our park system is that we've lost so much revenue by both an economy that's been in distress with the auto industry, but we've been cutting taxes for 12 or 15 years. And if we went back to the same tax rate that we had under Governor Engler, we'd have $2 or $3 billion more dollars to pay for the roads we need to pay for and pay for higher education access.
We got to leave it there. John Austin is director of the Michigan Economic Center. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Mark.
On December 15th, the day after the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary, a stay-at-home mom in suburban Indianapolis founded 1 Million Moms for Gun Control. Now called Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, Shannon Watts' initial Facebook page has transformed into more than 80 chapters and hundreds of thousands of members nationwide. Their goal is to become the MAD equivalent for gun violence while advocating for sensible gun regulations. With me now are two local leaders in the movement. Nancy Brundage is founder of the Mid-Michigan Lansing chapter of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, and Jennifer Edwards is the Ann Arbor chapter's founders. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you so
much. There
was
obviously a moment in the aftermath of Sandy Hook when you both, or one or the other of you, read about the founding of 1 Million Moms, and you decided you had to get involved. Tell us about that moment.
Yes, I held a meeting in my home on January 17th.
This is Nancy from Lansing, right?
This is Linda.
I beg your pardon.
That's okay. And 20 people came to that meeting. We drafted a mission statement, and on January 31st, determined that locally, Mid-Michigan Lansing would become a chapter of what was then called 1 Million Moms. Since then, we've had some activity here, and we are growing, and that's true across the nation, as you mentioned in your introductory piece. I personally have had gun control, gun issues in my heart for a very long time, probably starting with Columbine. I'm a mom, I'm a grandma, and after Sandy Hook, it was like, enough is enough, and what can I do? How can I contribute to making a difference?
And Jennifer, what about you?
I agree. I think that Sandy Hook was a tipping point for so many people because we've been watching this since Columbine for about 11 or 12 years now. And just the sheer overwhelming feelings that one had. It's all we could talk about for a week. It's all we could see on the news for a week. And you just get to a point where enough is enough. If I can get involved and do something, I want to make a difference. I want to help save one child. And that's really what I thought.
Linda, do you have a specific goal for your Lansing chapter? Membership goal, that kind of thing?
Oh, in terms of numbers, we welcome anyone that would want to participate in helping us. The focus of our group, both statewide and nationally, is on legislative change. And we support four main points that we're focusing on at this time. We want a ban on assault weapons and high ammunition magazines. We want required background checks. That's critical and probably a meeting of the minds point. The third point that is important is that we want a report of large quantities of ammunitions, the AFT, so things can be tracked and monitored and that sort of thing. And then we want to counter gun industry lobbyists who are working to change the laws at the state level. So those are our four points of focus at this time. What's important for your listeners to know is that Moms Demand Change is a nonpartisan group. We totally get the Second Amendment. This is not about coming after guns, taking guns away from sportsmen, sports shooters, that kind of thing. We totally understand the Second Amendment. So what we're trying to do is find common ground with people
and it
for
all
common
sense.
Right,
and it constitutes a sensible approach in your
precisely.
View. Jennifer, have you in Ann Arbor had a gun buyback program like we have here in Lansing?
We have not had that yet, and it doesn't seem to be that the type of crime in particular in Ann Arbor is gun-related. It's more of the nature of breaking and entry. So that doesn't seem. We have lots of hunters. I have friends who personally not only carry weapons, concealed weapons, they also teach classes in them. people have them. It just isn't the focus, and it isn't a crime topic typically.
Linda, what do you make of Mayor Bonero's efforts along those lines?
I thought Mayor Bonero's efforts and the Lansing Police Department made a significant contribution to the safety of our community. As you know, over 120 guns came off our streets, and that was huge. We had a presence there thanking Verge and the Lansing Police Department for their efforts and holding signs that said common sense gun laws. Mm-hmm. It was interesting to meet with and talk with the men that were there paying cash for guns. We had an opportunity to dialogue with them and find where we would have common ground. And probably the strongest point of common ground was on the background check issue.
Right.
All of them that talked to us were in agreement that we need to have thorough background checks for purchasing guns.
I wish we had more time, but we're out of it, I'm afraid. Linda Brundage is founder of the Mid-Michigan Lansing chapter of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Jennifer Edwards is the Ann Arbor chapter's founder. Thank you both very much. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
It's Current State here on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. This weekend, the New York Philharmonic comes to Ann Arbor's Hill Auditorium. Sunday's program features an all-Russian lineup with Saturday's bill devoted to Mozart and Brahms. ...2013 marks the centennial of Hill Auditorium, and WKAR continues to celebrate with the occasional series Hill at 100. WKAR's Peter Wharf recently met with Jim Leha, the Director of Education and Community Engagement with the University Musical Society. UMS has presented great music of many styles from around the world in its illustrious association with the venue. Peter spoke with Jim about some of his favorite musical memories at Hill Auditorium and the hall's famed architect, Albert Kahn. The two reflected on similarities between Hill Auditorium and some of the other stages of the pre-20th century, such as Chicago's Auditorium Theater.
It's interesting, too, because the auditorium preceded Hill, and Hill is sort of loosely based on the Auditorium Theater. And there's one very significant difference. At the Auditorium Theater, there's all of this boxed seating, so people are sort of looking at each other. But Hill was all about the sort of democratic element of being a space for the campus. And so the idea is that there are no divisions between audience members here, and you're just as close to the stage, you know, as you are to your seatmate. It's one of the really special things about the hall.
Well, it is an auditorium in the sense of you have rows all looking at the stage.
Right.
You know, there are no boxes or sort of special seating areas,
right.
But it's an incredibly beautiful auditorium.
Yeah, it is. I look at these, the beautiful sort of necklace that goes around the stage and the detail that went into the plaster work. And when I was at the Bentley Library, saw the hand sketches of all the detail, I had always wondered what that looked like in the drawings, how it was actually rendered. And Kahn and Associates had this history of being inspired by and working with all of these Italian plaster makers and tile makers. And there's just this beautiful sort of simplistic elegance to the hall. You can really take it for granted, but as you get closer to it, I think it really unfolds so beautifully. Yeah. I'm sort of obsessed with these crisscrossing grid around the organ, and all these little dots. I lose my mind over it.
It reminds you of mosaic.
Yeah, it does. It really does. Yeah, and I think it was interesting because we pulled a few of the books from the Kahn collection that were books of tile work, and this sort of idea of the grid, the mosaic, was very much on the mind of the architects and engineers as they were making this building. I think you see it a lot more too at the front of the building where there's this sort of lattice work in the brick, which is also really, really gorgeous.
And there's a classical architecture to it that
Absolutely.
That relates.
Yeah, and there's, you know, the interesting thing with Conn that I think people can maybe take for granted was that the buildings were about, you know, the sort of form before function, or rather the reverse, function before form, or what is it? Form follows function. Yeah. There you go. So the thing about Conn is that, you know, form follows function. And so this space was really a spin of all the factories that he created. So what are the two spaces that need to have wide open, huge ceilings? It's an auditorium for music and it's a car factory. And these are things are all happening at the same time in Metro Detroit. But the elegance of it is just really profound because you have this huge open space, but there's just these tiny little details that really bring it alive.
Yeah, the elegance factor is everywhere, as you say, from factories to Hill to the Fisher Building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the Fisher Building, right? I mean, it's iconic.
What are some of your personal musical memories or favorites here?
Oh, gosh. You know, my absolute, you know, favorite moment in Hill Auditorium was when the Mariachi Vargas came here 2 years ago. It was their debut concert. They are the most famous mariachi group in the world. I will just say that. And they're the most amazing performers. And they have such a tremendous following in the Latino community. And there was this elderly Mexican man sitting in the front row. And at a certain point, one of the mariachis came down. They were singing a very famous song. They passed the microphone down to this elderly man. He sort of sang along for a bit. And then he took the microphone and he sang the entire rest of the song. And it was just this genius moment of what is possible at Hill Auditorium, one of the most famous musical groups in the world, connecting with their own community. And really, there's no other experience like that.
Jim Leha at Hill Auditorium in Ann Arbor, celebrating 100 years of Hill. Jim, thanks so much.
Thank you.
For Current State, this is Peter Wharf.
Linda está la mañana en que vengo a saludarte. Venimos todos con gusto y placer a felicitarte. El día en que tú naciste, nacieron todas las flores. En la pila del bautizo cantaron los ruiseñores. Ya viene amaneciendo, ya la luz del día nos dio. Levántate de mañana.
It's Current State here on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. I don't think any Lansing native, or really anyone maybe who's ever visited the state capitol that hasn't done a double take if they've seen the Lansing State Journal's front page this morning or it was online yesterday afternoon. Their article about all of the painstaking work going into maintaining our beautiful state capitol. There's a really cool photo showing Greg Hess doing his thing in the Capitol Rotunda. Check that out if you haven't already. A really great photograph in its own right. But the work to preserve the state capitol just continues. And to think how far we've come over the past 15 years or thereabouts is really, really dramatic. I see Matthew Van Acker, director of the Capitol Tour and Information Service, goes so far as to say that we believe, I'll quote here, we believe this is probably the best example now of Victorian artwork in the United States. More than 120,000 people take tours going through the state capitol building each year. Check that out. If you haven't seen the front page of the Lansing State Journal, it kind of jumps out at you here this morning. You can reach us at currentstate@wkar.org with your ideas, story suggestions, whatever the case may be. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk with a featured poet at this weekend's Big Poetry Out Loud Festival. And we'll do a little Oscars preview because we just couldn't help ourselves. The executive producer of Current State is Peter Wharf. Joe Lindstroth is the producer. Thanks to Aaron Young for engineering and to Sonia Treeweiler for production assistance. I'm Mark Bayshore. You've been listening to Current State on WKAR.